And you're right.
When somebody else comes in, we'll approve the minutes and it'll be official. The people that are in attendance right now, I want to recognize Councilman Bell, Councilman Cartier. Mr. Powers is going to be late. Mr. Hollins will not be here. Ms. Diller and Ms. Kilpatrick have meetings. Mr. Smiley's here, Mr. Street, Councilman Weiner, and myself, and my aide, Stephanie, is taking the minutes for right now. And as soon as somebody comes in, we'll get the minutes approved, but we're not going to hold anything up. We have updates on the Claymont Library, the special services wanted to talk about, and the permit process here. So, further ado, who's up the deck?
I think some of you have met me, but not all. My name is Stephen Rubel. I'm the project administrator with Special Services. I've worked here for about
Before we start, I can get Mrs. Kilpatrick is here.
Motion to approve the minutes of April 16th.
And the motion's made in the second. Approve the minutes. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. Thank you.
Sorry.
No problem.
Yeah. Stephen Rubel, R-U-B-L-E. I've worked for Special Services with Barry Nahi for about 2.5 years now. I've been managing projects for close to 30 years now. To give you a little bit of background, I have professional engineering licenses as well as architect's licenses. I'm here today to give you an update on the Claymont Library project. I'm going to give you a really quick pictorial chronology on the project, and then I'll give you a little bit of an update on the actual project. This photo that you're looking at was over 2 years ago. It was the March of 2011. It was the site essentially before we really touched it at all. Most of the pictures you're going to see here, as I page through here, are going to be pretty much the same view. So you'll be able to see how the library evolved. This is September of 2012. So, you know, a lot of work and preparation happened between that previous picture and the initiation of site work on the site.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
If we could, I'd like just to ask if Steve could just orient people a little bit, you know, directionally, what we're looking at, you know, how we, so they have a sense of this.
Sure,
you know?
Absolutely.
And we have Councilman Retta and Councilwoman Diller has joined us as well. Thank you.
If you haven't been to the site, it's maybe a little bit difficult for me to orient you, but you're basically looking at Darley Road from Lenape Way. And Lenape Way is a horseshoe-shaped road that cuts between the Darley Green subdivision and the library site. We're looking a little bit toward Philly Pike, so it's a little bit of an angle that way, primarily toward Darley.
So this is looking north, more or less.
It's probably looking more east.
Okay.
What if I sit on that side of the room?
Or hang.
All right, so here we go, just a month later after that previous site, and underground utilities and foundations are on their way. You can see the yeah. curb into the parking lot in front of the library, you know, as well as the curbing along Lenape. In the background, you can see the Darley Green subdivision. Now, at this time, the Darley Green subdivision was somewhat stagnant. They were having a difficult time selling some properties and getting, kind of keeping things moving. Nice thing is, and you'll probably see that in the last picture, is that since the library started and the underground utilities started, they really started to generate interest in the townhomes and the site there. Now, Most of the public knows that, you know, a year or two can go by and a lot is happening, but the public really doesn't seem to think anything's happening. It's usually when the steel starts going up, the public says, oh, wow, they're really now starting to build the library. So here we go. Foundations are in, the steel's going up. And then a couple weeks later, and you can see how much more, you know, is completed. This is just a month later from the previous photo. So you can see how much activity is happening. We're actually getting to the point here where building enclosure is happening, which is always an important milestone in a construction project. Here we're getting very close to completing the enclosure of the building. And you can see some of the front towers, fenestration of the building going up. Now we can really start to see kind of the form of the building taking shape. The building is enclosed at this point. And that's just prior to the next set of pictures I'm gonna show you, which are all going to be basically where we're at today. So I'll page through some of those photos. If you have any questions, I mean, just shout them out. To give you a sense of where we're at right now, concrete, structural steel roofing are essentially 100% complete now on the library. Masonry is probably 90 to 95% complete. One of the things we did as far as the masonry was add a cornerstone that Councilman Cartier facilitated, and that's installed now on the front of the building as you enter.
It's out of Brandywine granite. Carved from the site.
Out of Blue Rock, which is Brandywine Blue Nice. HVAC work is 80% complete. Plumbing and electrical work is 55 and 60% complete, respectively. We're on schedule to achieve substantial completion on August 16th with a grand opening of end of October. This is a view from the other side of Lenape Way. This one's looking north. So you can see it's the other corner of the library, still looking at the front of the library, but also the eastern side. If you haven't taken a tour through the library, you can certainly give me a call or talk to Councilman Cartier. We can facilitate that. The views inside are just absolutely spectacular. You can see how much glass that we incorporated into the building. When you're in there, the views just out onto the site are just absolutely fantastic. So I think it's really going to be spectacular for, you know, the public and the users of the library. I think it's going to be a really nice and unique library for them. This is in the children's area. It's some of the kind of specialized drywall work that we're doing. These are ceiling soffits, ceiling units that we installed and kind of, you know, add to the playfulness that's in the children's area. So we think the kids are going to like that. This is just off the main atrium, looking back into the periodical section toward the back of the library. The atrium is a really large area within the center of the library that's going to be pretty spectacular too. This is just off the atrium, looking into the adult section. In fact, if you look through the glass, you can see, you know, some of the site and the stormwater management facilities that serve the library and Darley Green. This is again looking at the periodicals section, which is going to be pretty dramatic when you're in that section. You're pretty much, you know, all four sides are fully glazed. And then just the last picture, I just thought I'd show you some of the recent construction at Darley Green. I think the library has definitely had quite an impact on the activity that's been happening there. Just to the right side of those townhouse units are the Green Street and Flathers Way, which essentially link the library back to the original Green Street.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Go ahead.
If I could just make a few observations while that picture's up. The design is circumferential. And after, I mentioned this before, after a street in London, those units are just the first of a circumferential border that will be stunning and will create interest not only in purchasing, but this will be a kind of place that people will want to come visit. The library also looks on what I'll call sort of a Bancroft Parkway that opens up with a median strip down the middle. And all of this is emulating the historic fabric of the historic villages in Claymont. Then on the other side of the library, of course, we've got our Woods Haven Cruise Park. And then additionally, we're going to have this lower land that serves a dual purpose of being both beautiful and capturing the retention basin for the water. For folks who've always thought of themselves as forgotten in Claymont, this has really raised civic pride, and the county's doing a great job.
Councilman Retta?
Thank you. A couple questions. Well, one, I'd like to say, that looks like real brick.
That is real brick.
I just wanted to say that for somebody.
The clock tower out. I know that was a change order. He lowered my voice down.
The other is, the questions I have are, the total price on the bid, what was it? And is there any extras on this?
The current budget right now is sitting at about $10.7 million.
What was the bid price?
The bid price for all the trades?
For the building, from start to finish.
If are you just talking trades or including all soft costs?
What are you talking about, soft costs?
Soft costs are all the, you know, essentially the design cost, my
I'm talking
time,
about the total
appraisal fees.
The total price of the building.
Total price is $10.7 million.
Okay, is there
now
any?
That includes the value of the land, which is at $700,000 based okay. on the appraisals.
Now, is there any extras in this?
Any extras meaning?
Job extras.
Add-ons?
As far as change orders?
Right.
Yes, we have change orders on the project. Some of those are owner requested, other ones are not. We do have change orders on the project.
Okay, what was the purpose of the owner requested and the ones that weren't?
The owner requested ones are primarily to provide, you know, additional services that either community services or special services wanted, for the library. That may be some additional AV work in the meeting rooms, additional card access, just various things that we know are going to make the library function smoother. As an example, one of the things we did at Bear, which you're probably aware of, is to offer off-hours access to the meeting rooms, and basically to divide that zone from the rest of the library space. So, you know, when the library wasn't open, council persons, any other persons with approval can come in and use those meeting rooms. At the time that this was designed, that really wasn't a topic of conversation. We've included that concept here, and so we've been able to separate those spaces, provide card access, and features to allow that to happen off hours. So there are a few things like that that we've added into the project to add some value and offer those, those amenities.
Okay, but I thought in the beginning, and I believe Councilman Cartier can correct me if I'm wrong, that we talked about that prior to the building being approved, to where it can be accessed for the public.
Yeah, we probably talked about it, but the actual facilitation of it and how it all operated, we really didn't have a good sense of that. And having gone through Bear Library and kind of working out those issues, fleshing out, what worked and what didn't work, it sort of generated a few things in order to facilitate that off-hours access.
It was done with Bear.
Right, exactly. And so, setting up card access to make that off-hours access work better, to provide security and safety for those personnel. So there were a few little things that we needed to add to tweak that to make sure that that worked right.
So that was
things like that.
That was the owner's decision.
Yeah, that's the owner's.
Okay, now what happened with that the owner didn't do and contractors did?
There are some things that are fire marshal requested that don't fall under the guise of owner requested items.
They weren't built into the price, the fire marshal stuff?
Yeah, the majority of it is, but there are always miscellaneous items after the fire marshal actually starts walking through the building that they want to add an exit sign here or add a pull station here. Always happens. Done this for 30 years. They always walk through and they go, you know what, we reviewed the drawings, but we didn't have an exit sign here. Well, we want you to add that. So there are things like that that get added. There are design errors and there are contractor errors.
So we had to pay for contractor errors?
Depending on what those issues are.
I've been on plenty of jobs. I was on this job here. I was on one across the alley. I've been on just about every building in this town. And any contractor error, they ate it. That was their fault.
It depends on what the issues are.
That doesn't make any difference. Every job I was on, the contractor made the error, they ate it.
Right.
You don't pay them for what they made a mistake on.
Yeah, what I've done is on this project is actually develop a spreadsheet that itemizes every change order on the project and itemizes those responsibilities based on where they lie. We'd be glad to get that to you.
I'll accept it.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What, in comparison to like the Brandywine 100 Library on Falk Road, Bear Library, how does this compare cost-wise as far as the project when you look at $10.7 million plus?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you because I was not involved in the Brandywine 100 Library.
Okay.
So there's really not a comparison. Okay. In the 2.5 years I've been here, you know, obviously I managed the Bear Library mm-hmm. project. But that one's so unique compared to this one because mm-hmm. of its renovation aspects. So those two projects don't compare.
Well, let me ask you this, and there's folks here that can probably answer it. J Street, myself, George Smiley, share representation of the entire Route 9 corridor. And I guess what I'm wondering is, what do we have appropriated in the 2014 for land acquisition and to move forward with the Route 9 library, roughly?
I believe Ms. Brown might be able to address that.
Okay.
I was looking at you. Diana Brown, Department of Community Services, and I was looking at our representative from the executive office because we, I think, are close to selecting a site for 9 and 13. I don't want to be premature. And we do have a needs assessment that is completed. We also are going to be working with a technology consultant to make sure that we capture the AV aspect of it and the library technology piece of it. I think Councilman Street asked at the last meeting I was at about the 6.7, which is currently million, which is currently budgeted for that project. And I said at the time that was just a very preliminary budget to get us started. And I think you all remember that over the years we typically come back for additional funding. One of the things that's important to understand is that we receive up to 50% in matching construction costs from the state for these projects, but they will only give us money for to match expenditures for a given year. So the challenge for us is we already are beginning to put together our application for FY15 bond bill funding for the Route 9 and 13 library, and we don't have a site yet, we don't have an architect yet. So it's kind of, one step and then the next step and then the next step. But we are very excited about that library. There's a very active Friends of Garfield Library group that is meeting regularly and looking forward to helping us. So that is definitely our next project today.
And where I'm going with this is that this is all very exciting for residents of New Castle County, and I hear comments like forgotten areas and everything else, and there is no area that I know that deserves more a library than that Route 9 corridor from a standpoint of forgotten land, forgotten citizens, children, deprived, and everything. So we're as excited with the fact that the new library, But I would hope that we can build a 10.7 million plus building up north, that same consideration is given to that Route 9 corridor. And I see picturesque, I see brick, I see atriums and all that, and it's exciting. But we deserve the same in other areas, and I know that our fellow councilmen will support that, but it's long overdue for our area, and you know, we're going to continue, all three of us, to, you know, beat the drums and everything, but we expect no less in our area than what's being done here. So it's exciting, but it's a little depressing in a sense to us, from the standpoint that we're not there yet, and we've got an area that has been in need for years. So I just voice that as support, but also a little apprehension, because I want to, you know, want it on the record that we expect no less.
I think what you'll find, I think what you'll find from library to library, excluding escalation, mm-hmm. that you'll see over the years, depending on when a project was done, the square footage cost of the building will compare. Of all of our libraries, you'll pretty much see that same cost. What varies in the total price are things like the site conditions that we have here. And that can drastically change the total price of a project. I mean, here with the land being $700,000 and the amount of work that we had to do in getting this site ready to support not only the library, but it actually supports all of the stormwater management facilities for Darley Green. So it's going to be things like that that will vary the overall cost. But I think what you'll find is that any library, any building that we do, is going to have that very similar square footage cost.
Okay. And just one final question. Like I say, this, it's exciting, but it'll be more exciting when we see something in our area. I guess from the standpoint of the land acquisition and where you're looking, are those sites being discussed with Councilman Street and Councilman Smiley and myself? I mean, is there any things that are out there that you're looking at possibly that, you know, we could be informed or be involved in? I know this is Claymont, but at the same time, it has to do with the future libraries, acquisition, and where it's going to go.
Jim McDonald, Executive Office. We hope to have something to you in the latter part of this week, if not early next week. There are a couple sites. We're going to narrow it down. We've got to see the engineering that's involved and also, quite frankly, what the cost would be for land acquisition so that we get the most bang for the buck.
And the reason I mention that, there's some very deprived areas along Route 9 from the West Avenue up to the Hillview Avenue and beyond that are there. And it's not too pretty right now, but it would be a wonderful sight and wonderful for our community to be able to have something like this along that Route 9 corridor and everything. So, I mean, where Canaan Baptist Church is, when you look across at the areas over there, you know, they're areas that really could be redeveloped and developed in the best interest of the community.
We hear
but,
you.
And we're in full support. I mean, this is it's beautiful. Exciting to hear, but when you hear the price tag and you see the eloquence, we want that same eloquence to travel south.
I'm sure you'll be happy.
Mr. Cordier?
Thank you. And I just want to first talk a little bit about Councilman Bell and the group, the concern about Route 9. And I, too, am concerned about Route 9. And just want to say to all of you that we had a lot of great work with the Friends Group and Community Services and our partners in state government, but fundamentally what made this project go forward was the vote of this Newcastle County Council and the community of Claymont, and myself are very grateful to you folks, and we're going to extend that support to your Route 9 project, and it should be a grand and beautiful public amenity to serve all those underserved people with a, you know, state-of-the-art library, just like in Claymont. So you have my support 110%, and, you know, I'll be making the same issues that you will make. The one issue that I can tell you you're probably not going to encounter when we're looking at site, you're not going to be quarrying out Brandywine granite down there on Route 9. I may be wrong about that, but I know there was a lot of rock removed here that sort of endemic to where we live.
But we move in focus.
So, just a couple of, you know, further observations.
We thank you, Councilman.
Yeah, thank you. You know, when we did all the master planning for Darley Green, and that was a daunting and huge process, we have 70 acres, which became the kind of essential project for the Claymont Renaissance. We had some idea of civic buildings and civic uses, but there was really no concept of a library in the original plan. And I want to tell you, it was a really interesting set of circumstances that led me in this direction, because I began to work with the Friends of the Claymont Library Group just as a constituent group. And there was one gentleman there, a retired chemist with DuPont, his name's Keelan Fry, who doesn't reside in Claymont, but is a friend of Claymont Library. And he laid out for me in a very interesting presentation using clear acetate and an overhead projector. He's kind of old school, Keelan. The absolute necessity of a new library in Claymont. And when he got done his presentation in one of the classrooms in the community center, which was the old high school, I was struck by it. I said, well, we've got to go and do this because it makes perfect sense. Then we had a bit of a wrangle about siting it. And that went in a very interesting direction, and this is where we found the site to place the library. And that goes to work with the Department of Land Use and the former County Executive Paul Clark. So this has become way more than we ever expected, and now we are the reality of this under construction nearing completion, opening in October. And it has become something that is going to add a new dynamism to the Claymont Renaissance and a new civic pride. And we're all pretty amazed at the quality of this, bearing in mind that this does fit in with the traditional neighborhood design and all the use of brick. And brick is sort of a well-used historical building material in Claymont. The old high school is made out of brick. Most of the all the buildings in the Darley Green site utilize brick, so this fits in really well. And it's something that folks throughout the Claymont community will be able to walk to very easily or ride a bicycle. So it is a very pedestrian-friendly sighting of this library, and we're really looking forward to it. But fundamentally, you know, I just want to state again for the record, the Claymont, Greater Claymont community and myself are eternally grateful to this council for its support of that capital budget that made this go forward. And I was just happy to be with
Councilman
the community and everybody else in that vote.
Just briefly, I want to go on record as seconding the sentiments of Councilman Cartier, and I look forward to supporting my fellow council persons in your worthy endeavor. We have, as I've said before, we have a proud tradition of helping each other because we care about everyone in Newcastle County.
Okay, can we, Mr. Manager Wayne?
Wayne Merritt, Acting General Manager, Special Services. Just to tie in the comments of Steve, Council Greta, Council Cartier, change orders, site conditions, Rock and Brandywine, which will not happen, I guarantee you, anywhere in Newcastle County. There were change orders that you had to do. You had to pay for whatever it was, the rock you had to excavate.
Elaborate a little bit more on that, excluding the rock change orders, the total percentage of change orders on this project is 1.6%. And I think if anyone has any experience with construction, they'll live with that forever. I mean, you're not going to beat that. 1.6% change orders, that's pretty good. So we're happy with that. Bear had a few more, being a renovation. But we've been very lucky on this as far as, you know, all the change orders exclusive of, you know, the rock that we unfortunately encountered. So we'll send you that spreadsheet.
Okay.
Brick looks good also down along Route 9.
A lot of people
got
down
a lot of
there
masonry
Route 9 to do it.
That's right.
Yeah, the person really? Got a yard inside. You just give it to him.
I thought we'd go more with Marvel.
William Penn.
since we don't we're only going to get one shot at it.
Since we don't have the blue rock, we'll have more money to play with.
Any other questions?
Is that it? All right. Well, thank you, Steve. Yeah,
sure, absolutely.
Thank you. Mr. Street, for the project manager?
No, okay. I would be remiss if I didn't simply say thank you to all concerned and going forward. I'm looking forward to it.
I'd wait for the vote of Agio.
Okay, after the Claymont Library, we have the NPDES. It's called Permit Process, and General Manager, want to speak on it? Or
wait, Mayor, I'm General Manager of Special Services. We're pleased to present to Council, after many years of discussing the NPDES permit that has been issued, and Mike Harris will talk about the relevant elements of that permit and maybe some costs that we will incur because of the permit.
If you could please explain the acronym NPDES as well for those uninitiated.
Okay,
thanks.
Services. As Wayne just mentioned, we just recently on May 7th got our new Phase 1 NPDES permit, which is National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit. It's been a long time coming. We've been talking about it for the last probably 6-7 years when we've come to Council. A little background on the permit itself. The Clean Water Act, Section 402, and Delaware Code 7, Delaware Code 60. Prohibits any kind of discharge of pollutants from a point source unless you're covered by a permit. In the past, NPDES permits were focused primarily on wastewater treatment plants and industrial sources, but they've grown to know that pollutants from stormwater can carry sediment, nutrients, heavy metals, pesticide, herbicides, fertilizers, organic compounds, etc. Anything that's spilled on the ground will eventually make its way untreated into the surface waters of the state. The county was required to get a phase one permit. There's phase one and phase two permits because we have a urbanized population over 100,000. A little history. Our previous permit was issued in 2001. It was supposed to expire in May of 2006, but we've been in negotiations with DENREC ever since then, and they've administratively extended it until today. To back up that original permit, the federal government issued the county a consent decree. That consent decree basically mirrored all the stuff that was in the original permit. And one of the things we need to do now is work to extinguish that original consent decree because things have changed in the new permit. The original permit had all the Ardens, Bellefonte, Delta City, Osborne, Newtown, Newport, Newcastle, Odessa Townsend, and Wilmington, including Delta. And the decision they made with the new permit is to get rid of the Ardens, to get rid of Odessa Townsend, and so the new permit, as I mentioned, was issued on May 7th, 2013. Newcastle County and Del Dot are the shared co-permittees, or shared permittees, and the other municipalities I mentioned are considered co-permittees. It's organized in a phase two fashion. There's six minimum measures we have to follow, consisting of a public education involvement, part, construction, management, new development management, good housekeeping, management of industrial sources, and monitoring. And two different things you'll notice about this permit. A lot of the expectations in the permit, in the last permit, were not clear. There were a lot of things that we had to guess on, and they came up during audits. EPA is now making sure there's measurable goals in all permits, in all the permits. So it's a good thing for us because we know what the expectation is now. It's a good thing for them because they know how to enforce the permit. And one of the first steps we have to do is develop a stormwater pollution prevention and management plan that basically is going to take the permit and all the requirements in the permit and put it into a manageable roadmap that we can handle. It's going to define responsibilities between us, Delta, and the co-permittees, and it will be, you know, a living, breathing document that will expound on the permit. So going through these minimum measures, the first thing is the public education involvement piece. We have to develop strategies not only to educate the public, but also to get them to change their behavior. So we have to measure their behavior change in public, through public statistically valid surveys. So we're going to be doing a survey at the beginning of a permit term and one later on in the permit cycle to see if people are learning about stormwater and changing their behaviors. And one of the measurable goals is we must make 250,000 impressions per year. And an impression is somebody drives by a billboard, they see the billboard, they read an article, they see something on a website. So those are the impressions. The next component is illicit discharge detection and elimination. This is something we already have in our permit now. We must be out looking and responding to complaints about illicit discharges to the storm sewer. And these are anything basically other than stormwater getting into the storm sewer system. There are certain things that are excluded. Dechlorinated swimming pool water, for example, can get in the storm sewer legally. There's a whole list in there. So firefighting activities are allowed to discharge to the storm sewer system. As part of our program, and we've done this in the past, we need to go out and screen 20% of the storm sewer system per year to look for dry weather flow that's occurring during the period of after 72 hours of dry weather. If we're seeing dry weather flow, we have to screen it with test kits and see, you know, if there's something there, we have to track it back up to the source.
Could I go back to that,
please? Yes.
Go ahead, sir.
So we're going to be going into the Delbot stormwater system and testing?
Well, in the last permit, what we did is we divided that. Delbot and Kimball County shared that responsibility equally. We had a contract, and we both contributed 50%. This is something we'll probably negotiate. We'll probably let Delbot handle their system, and we'll handle the smart part. We do have a small portion of MS4 system. So we'll probably handle that, and we'll let them handle theirs. Won't be a 50-50 split.
What is our portion of it?
Our portion is the publicly owned stormwater management ponds of the county. They're on county parkland.
Okay.
Or anything from county park, any kind of dollar.
Excuse me.
And Jordan, Mr. Smiley.
Would our responsibility, I know I got into one shortly after I got into office, where the stormwater runs underground, then it comes into an open ditch, would become our responsibility to keep clear and flowing, then went back underground, would that open section be? I mean, the testing shouldn't change from one to the other, but I'm just curious if that's...
That probably, if that's our responsibility, then probably would. I think Delbot generally maintains, 50 feet from the end of the pipe is there.
Yeah, I ended up with long and short of it was, I told everybody to go home. I went home and got a shovel and cleaned it myself. But yeah, because in is Delbot, out is ours. Okay.
Construction, this is something we're doing now. Department of Land Use, this is plan review and construction inspections. Really no change from what we're doing right now. Again, post-construction, this is what Special Services does. We go out and inspect all the stormwater ponds and DMPs in the county on an annual basis. There really is no change for us in the new permit. This is existing requirement. Good housekeeping has expanded somewhat. That really applies only to county-owned and municipally owned facilities. We have to get an inventory of all of our facilities, all of our parking lots, all of our maintenance bases, and make sure that we have adequate plans in place and we're following best management practices for that and discharge of pollutants. That also includes controlling the pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers we apply to our parkland, our salt storage for snow and ice. And there's also an employee training component of this program. We have to educate all of our employees that could potentially have some impact on stormwater pollution. Industrial stormwater program. The county right now, under our current permit, or under this permit and under our old permit, we assist the state with inspecting industrial and high-risk facilities throughout the county. We get together once a year and divide up a list of these industrial high-risk sites. These are landfills that are industrial sites, store materials outside, these kinds of places. We meet with them and then we divide that up. DENRC is in the process of promulgating new industrial stormwater regulations, and they're trying to shift that responsibility to the counties, to the other people, and make us responsible for all the facilities. So just to let you know that's going on. We've
kind of question.
Go ahead.
Is that an unfunded mandate?
Yeah.
Yes.
Monitoring. We had, under our old permit, we had wet weather monitoring and dry weather screening, as we talked about, for illicit discharges. We still have, we're going to have that again. We're going to try, the goal of the wet weather monitoring is to measure how well our BMPs and ponds and practices are working, to see if we're making progress towards achieving water quality. Dry weather screening is to find illicit discharges. A new element added is the PCB. There's going to be PCB sampling, and we're going to have to develop a communication plan. As you probably know, the Delaware River and a lot of the tributaries to the Delaware River have PCB issue. That's why there's these fish advisories. You can't get one fish meal per year or one fish meal per month. The DRBC is working on tracking back the sources for these PCBs, and that's one of the things we're going to do as part of this. We're already doing that on the sewer side, but now we're going to have to move to the stormwater side.
Mr. Bell?
I guess going back to Councilman Weiner's question of it being an unfunded mandate, what is the cost associated with us accepting that mandate being unfunded, and what inherent responsibilities fall over to us that DenRec now has? How does that all work out?
It'll probably mean hiring an additional inspector. I get the numbers for you, but it's pay grade, probably a pay grade 20 in benefits. That's what we're looking at.
And any legal implications as far as, like, they share in some responsibilities now? So if it's an unfunded mandate, we accept it, we have to hire somebody, paying benefits and everything. Are there other responsibilities that go with that that they accept now or they're part of that they now put over on us?
Well, it's been a shared responsibility. They are, I mean, the state's argument is that since we own the MS4 and we have the permit, we should want to control industrial inspections because they do have the potential to impact our MS4 system. So, I mean, this is all in the infancy now. This is many years out. We'll participate. I'm sure we'll be asked to participate in trying to protect the county's best interests as we can through the process. So, no, I don't think it's anything. We don't know what the final thing is going to be.
Councilman Cordier.
I hope you were able to navigate this because, you know, I think it's a big minefield for us. Looking at all the industrial plants that are in my district, you know, they are permitted to have certain kinds of discharges, right? And it's essentially, we know you're polluting, here's the amount we're going to allow you to pollute. So now we're going to be verifying DenRec's, you know, permit, and they're issuing the permit about how much they can discharge, you know, say effluent off their site into a water body. You know, that goes on, right?
Right.
Delaware River is recipient of all that, mostly, when you're talking about my area. So, you know,
there's two different kinds of industrial permits. There's the general permit program, where there is one general permit for industrial dischargers, and they opt into that permit. Those are the kinds of facilities the county right now inspects. Then there's people that have individual MPDS permits that they get, like the bigger places probably in the district, they all have their individual permits, and right now DenRec handles this exclusively. I would expect that DenRec will continue to handle this exclusively, but not, because they don't convey water through the storm sewer system, they convey it directly to mm-hmm. surface waters, and that's the difference.
Alright.
I know you can't read this, I'm sorry, but this is basically a portion of a table that's in a permit. I can get that for you, but we've talked about TMDLs before, total maximum daily loads. As you know, many, if not all, of the stream segments in Newcastle County are impaired. They're not meeting their designated uses, and the state has come up with these TMDLs, with these pollution diets, so to speak, for these stream segments. And what they've done is they've developed a load of pollutants that these streams can handle, and they've allocated an allocation to the storm sewer system, to the MS4, to the MPDA. So we know what, and it's hard for me to read that as well, the blue background, but for example, the Appaquinimic River, total amount of nitrogen has to be reduced by 60% for the Appalachian River Community Designated Use. So that's something the county and Delta and the permit are working towards achieving. So in order to do so, besides all of the thing, all the other efforts we're doing, as part of this permit, and this is probably one of the more expensive elements of the permit, is we're going to have to develop water quality improvement plans for two watersheds in the county by year four of the permit. So the first thing we have to do is take all the watersheds in Newcastle County, prioritize them for these plans, and pick the top two on our priority list, and start developing this water quality improvement plan. The plan will identify projects, estimated costs, and funding sources to meet this community's water quality standards. And in terms of the, we'll consider all available BMP options. It could be retrofits, it could be public education campaigns, there could be opportunities to partner with other agencies. One of the big elements of these plans is we have to propose a reduction of 3% effective in these areas for these watersheds. So we went through this grill with Pipe Creek Watershed and Pipe Creek Pilot, a pilot study, and we had to go out and measure by GIS how much impervious area there was and come up with plans to reduce or to treat an additional 3%. It's not really an easy thing. But some of our friends in Maryland, they have 20% standards. That seemed to be the norm in Maryland, the D.C. area, to reduce impervious area by 20%.
Councilman Bell?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The cost of coming up with these plans and criteria for the watersheds and everything, is that cost shared by any other state or county or state or federal agency, or is it totally Newcastle County's responsibility?
It's Newcastle County. It's the permittee's responsibility. We'll look for ways to leverage funds to work on other, like all the retrofits we've done over the years, we can count all that towards on.
But do we currently receive any funding in any of those planning stages?
I mean, the state does have good programs for planning. Planning is not the expense. The expense is going to be actually out putting projects on the ground, retrofitting a lot of these older parking lots and things like that. And then, the fourth bullet there. These plans, we can propose a schedule for implementing these plans. It could be a 10-year plan. It could be, 15 years we can propose. I mean, the state may not accept it, but we can schedule these out over the long term. The problem is with that is that after we get through the first two plans, we expect in our next permit we'll have to do two more plans. At some point, these things are going to start overlapping with each other, and there's going to be increased expense. And the final element to talk about is we have to continually be evaluating the effectiveness of our plan. Now, less than 4 years of the permit, we have to really do an extensive, comprehensive effectiveness analysis by looking at our documentation of what we've done over the years, the surveys we talked about. We have to measure and provide estimates of how we've changed pollutant loadings to the streams, and we've got to look at available water quality sample data that's out there. We expect that there will be a lot of changes, that this whole permit will be an iterative process. We'll be learning as we go. That's the permit change.
Questions, Mr. Bell?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we look at permitting,
yes.
Who are those? We pay a fee to get the permits? Do we pay any fees to anyone to get the actual permitting?
No.
No? And the reason I'm asking is because I'm trying to put this thing together in my mind as far as we're delegated more responsibility with no funding coming at us. What are the inherent costs of being able to step up and do the different things that are basically dumped on us?
Wayne Merritt, Acting General Manager, Special Services. Councilman Bell's point, we've been talking about this over the years. The estimate for simply the planning necessary for the next 5 years is about $1 million. We'll split that with DelDOT. But that's the parsley on the plate. Because what you're planning is to correct problems. Correct and or prevent future problems. so that's where the real costs are going to come in, to be determined. I forget the exact amount that we put in this year's budget, since I don't have it in front of me, but we knew that this was a startup year, so you know, it was a minuscule to what will eventually become a requirement. Because it goes back to the basic thing with the federal government. They come in and they say, what's your problem? And then once you've identified your problem, what are you going to do about it? And not only what are you going to do about it, but what's your timeline?
Councilman Cartier?
You know, one of the goals of the permit was a 3% reduction in impervious cover.
Yes.
I mean, the process goes the other way. More and more impervious, you know.
Well, it's treatment. It's treatment of previously untreated.
Okay. Not just eliminating.
So, like, you know, the old merchandise mall, all that impervious area, somehow we can treat some of that. That would
right. Tri-State Mall.
But when you bring in new development, we should stay at par or get better. If it's redevelopment, we could actually get better.
Right. So, the 3% reduction is to treat water?
Treat previously untreated water.
Okay.
State for the record, Councilman Tackett's here. All right, well, thank you very much. We finally got that over with, and I can remember that probably even 8 years ago. I got six, and then we can start there. So then any more questions on that, we'll go to other. Councilman Retta had something.
Thank you. Wayne, over the past few years, say about 3 years now, Councilman Smiley and I wrote up about the retention. Instead of paying a lump sum in 20 years, we do it every year, and it would be based on the land also. So it would be built in, and then because we inspect every year for 20 years, the way it's written now. And with that, you know, the benefits go up, the wages go up, but the price of what we're inspecting stayed the same for that 20 years. So what we've been talking about, I don't know, between Councilman Smiley and I believe Councilman Smiley talked to Special Services, I know I did, about this on a yearly basis. Where are we at with this?
We've prepared a white paper for the exec's office on this issue. I should have known that question was going to be asked, but I didn't study it. But I do have my expert sitting here who may be able to give you a thumbnail sketch of the issues on this issue. So I defer to Mike. I think we all think it's a great idea to do it that way. I think just the implementation itself is the issue, and I think that's what all of us were looking at for us.
I think it's a fiscal issue or finance.
Yeah, it's what I think it's the way how to calculate, how to collect that fee. Because there's many, you know, chasing them, the way to collect the fee without having to chase it down.
Well, I mean, couldn't it be written as a...
I think it's going to require specific legislation, because I don't think we currently have the wording in the code is not permitted to do.
Yeah. Right, so we would have to change it.
So it's going to require a change to make it necessary to do that.
I think Councilman Smiley's still on board with it.
Yeah, Councilman Smiley, your hands up.
Yeah, I'll just go back to my initial conversations and discussions with it. There were several issues. The implementation of the process, the collection and tracking thereof, also being able to go in and assess those properties that are currently in the program that have paid the 20 years, when did that expire? When would that expire? When would the annual kick in? And with law, the big picture was, could someone seek reimbursement for the funds that they, if they'd been in, paid for the 20, had been in 5, we enact this, there's 15 left, could they seek reimbursement? So those were some of the questions that I know were being evaluated as a follow-up to some of my discussions.
Right. So it's not a simple
quite a few. System. Yeah. That's
yeah. I, with that, I'd just like to ask you, you know, how many places of business or establishments been paying over 20 years? I have over 20 years inspections right now.
Have been inspected for 20 years?
Well, the process that they've been in, are they past the 20 years now of paying?
I wouldn't think so. No, because we started.
When was it started? Let's put it that way.
2006.
Sorry?
2006.
Okay.
I know there was a discussion prior to that. I can't remember when we implemented.
So?
7 years of experience.
Should we talk to the law department to find out where they're at, or are you guys involved in talking with them?
We've had discussions with the law. We've also had discussions with the exec's office. I think the proper for us is to pursue it with the exec's office and make sure that they're proceeding.
Thank you.
Councilman Tackett?
I just had a question for him. I mean, it's your legislation, so you work on it. Is this residential, too, or just
no.
only commercial?
Yes.
Because I know many times, and what we run into now so much of, they form these LLCs and then they go out of business and they collect from. So sometimes maybe they lump sum and then make them purchase a warranty on it or something might help too.
Yeah, well, what we've been looking at is that, you know, once it passes hands, the commercial one, it's a continuation. So they would have to be paying all the time. Whoever takes the establishment.
All right, anything else on the other public comment? Anyone here? Motion for
motion adjourned.
So moved and seconded. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
So moved.
You did that in 15